Hello and welcome to this episode of the SCIF Meetings Podcast, the podcast for curious event professionals. My name is Andrea Doyle and I am the executive editor of SCIF Meetings. In this episode titled Event Strategist with Intention, I have the pleasure of speaking with Nicola Kastner, the founder of The Event Strategist. We discuss things like one of the best programs Nicola ever planned, which was the SAP Sapphire in Orlando. Her light bulb moment when she realized the events industry was for her. How she uses data to help her in a career. What she learned as an attendee of the TED conference in Vancouver. The big difference between the business of events and the events business. And how sustainability and business outcomes have to become intertwined. I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation, and I invite you to check out other episodes of the SCIF Meetings podcast with tips and insights from today's most influential event professionals. You can find all the episodes on our website or subscribe through your favorite podcast service.
Now for a word from our sponsors, PHL Life Sciences, a division of the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau. Host your convention or trade show in Philadelphia, one of America's leading life sciences hubs. PHL Life Sciences, the first and only CVB division of its kind, will connect you to the professionals at the forefront of your industry and to a culture you can only find in Philadelphia, a city known for its rich history that's forging a bright future. Philadelphia challenges the expected and defies convention. A world of discovery is waiting. Visit phllife.com to learn more.
So if you would start by introducing yourself and then we will get started.
Sure. So my name is Nicola Kastner and I am the founder of The Event Strategist, which is me, myself, and I, which is why it's only the one event strategist. And so I consult with clients on helping them optimize their event investments as a marketing tactic or as an association, for example, help them with their event strategy. But before that, I was the global vice president of event marketing strategy at SAP for 5.5 years. And then prior to that, I was on the agency side for a good portion of my career.
Oh, great. Can you tell us a bit about your journey as an event professional? Like start when you first encountered business events and take us to your current role with the event strategist today?
Sure, you got all day. I'll keep it somewhat short. So I actually was one of the rare people that went into events intentionally. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to get paid to travel the world, and I figured the best way to do that was to study hospitality and tourism. And so I went to university for that. And I think it was in my second year or my third year, I took a course on incentive travel. And that was before I knew I was as analytical as I am. But in this course, it was sort of like this light bulb moment for me where I realized that travel could impact business performance. And I was like, that's really cool. That's what I want to do. So that's sort of where for the rest of my degree, I focused my intentions and my course of study. Of course, everybody else wanted to do that as well. You know, it was an obvious, glamorous job. And so coming out of school, I worked on the hotel side. I worked at a DMC and then ultimately moved to Meritz on the agency side, where I was for 12 years. I worked at Meritz, started running incentive travel programs and getting paid to travel all over the world. I was living my dream. And then if I fast forward, probably, I think it was it would have been in the early 2000s. I'm dating myself now here, but I took a course at a conference that actually, once again, changed the course of my career, and it was on event strategy. And it was just so impactful to me. So that sort of created the next trajectory of my career away from incentive travel and more into using events to drive business performance as a marketing channel. Moved to a couple of different agencies throughout after leaving Meritz, and then started consulting for the first time. And as a consultant, I actually, SAP was my client. And I, as a non-Spanish or Portuguese speaking Canadian, I did all the Latin American event marketing strategy work for SAP. Makes no sense, right? Because here I am living in Toronto, but it worked really well. Did that for a number of years, a number of other initiatives, then went to a data management company to help build an event practice from the ground up. And then actually moved into SAP full time. It wasn't actually through any of my contacts that I had worked with, but I moved into Ariba as the head of events reporting to the CMO. Worked with her for almost a year to the day, actually. And then she was promoted to CMO of SAP Global Marketing. And shortly after that, tapped me to come over into the role that I was at for the rest of my time while I was at SAP, which was leading global event marketing strategy. So I was really focused on our portfolio of events, making sure that what we did drove maximum impact for both the company as well as for the attendees. So did that up until January 2022, and then started consulting.
Wow. What I find interesting is that you saw travel as a business tool. Like you said, incentive travel and then events and focus really on the strategy.
On the business side of events, I understood really early on that what I write about on LinkedIn a lot is around about the concept of the business of events, because at the end of the day, every single event we do, it doesn't matter whether it's an employee sales meeting, it's an incentive travel program, it's a customer conference, every event is meant to drive a business result and an outcome.
Because there was talk for a while about, oh, incentive travel is nothing but boondoggles.
Well, no. And you know what? There was. Do you remember that with the AIG crisis when the whole thing happened in 2009 when there were all the federal bailouts? Well, that was an incentive travel program that, if they're measuring, it's the same problem that we have still in events today. As long as we're measuring the outcomes that those events drive to the organization and we can talk about the outcomes, then events can be justified. What happened there was AIG wasn't able to talk about the impact to the organization that this incentive travel program had generated. And so it created this whole crisis and this whole overfocus on the quote unquote boondoggle of events versus if they had talked about the impact and the extra sales, it was actually a channel partner program. It wasn't even an employee program. With the outcomes that that incentive travel program had driven for the organization, the crisis, there wouldn't have been the fallout that there was, I honestly believe.
Right. And all the people I've talked to on this podcast and just in my reporting, there's not many that went into this industry saying, I want to be in business events.
Yeah, no, not at all. And I mean, I didn't want to be in business events. Let's be clear. I was 18 years old, I wanted to get paid to live a luxurious travel lifestyle. And so I figured what I could do was, you know, this was back in the day when you'd have like those brochures where like they'd have package holidays and you'd like, they'd all the packages would be put together and you'd pick your hotel and the package was all put together. That was what I wanted to be. That was my career aspiration when I went in, but it wasn't until I took this incentive travel course, I was like, actually, I think that sounds better.
So you've organized lots of events. Is there one that stands out in your mind as one that you're most proud of?
Yeah, I think probably, there's lots, and there's been a lot of amazing experiences that that I've been able to create and be part of creating. But I'd say Sapphire 2019 was probably one of the pinnacles for me. That's SAP's largest event. 2019 was the last year I ran it in person. And I say it was not I. I mean, this event was 25,000 people. It was a ton of people and work. I think we had something like 35 work streams. The content team alone was 120 people on this program. It was massive. I think about 5,000 employees we had calculated at one point worked on this program. So when I say I'm talking the collective I or the we. And that program was really amazing. We had I had partnered with the head of content marketing at SAP. I'd been given the opportunity and asked by the CMO to reinvent it. And I knew in order to do that, we needed to lead with content. I always say, like, it doesn't matter how pretty the picture frame is, it's inside that, what's inside that counts, it's the picture. And the same with an event, content is critical. So I had reached out to him and asked him to partner with me on creating this event and reinventing this event. And he was very smart because Sapphire was important to our business. I was always amazed at how often our executives referenced it throughout the year. And so he jumped at the opportunity. And so we actually were able to create an event that was focused on driving outcomes and solving challenges that our clients were all of them faced, no matter the industry, because, you know, if it's SAP, for people that don't know who SAP is, it's an enterprise software company with software that serves all different areas of the business. So IT, marketing, sales, finance, customer experience, procurement, you know, basically the entire enterprise, the software would serve different functions of it. So to try and create an event that added value for all those distinct audiences, we had to find something that was common across all of them. And it was these business outcomes that we narrowed it down to eventually and built the entire design of the event around that. We used to say that Sapphire had become the grocery store of SAP product, and we expected our customers to wander the aisle with a recipe in hand to try and figure out which pieces solve their problems. And, you know, we picked up on sort of the curation economy perspective and said, well, we're going to bundle it all together. So we're going to give them the blue apron experience, keeping with the recipe analogy here, and bundle all of the different solutions and the partner ecosystem and so forth together in order to solve their business challenges and outcomes.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, it was a great event. And I mean, it didn't hurt that our closing concert was Lady Gaga. So, like, you know, that was pretty epic. It was awesome.
And where was that held?
In Orlando.
Wow.
Yeah. And the Sapphire show floor, it's always been, well, I think it's been there since 2006 or something like that. But this, for context, the Sapphire show floor is all one space. So everything happens within the convention center. It's a million square feet of continuous space. We actually ran out of space. We had to build a tent for the dining, for the dedicated dining area, because we didn't have enough space. But within that footprint, there was the meeting center, there was the partner ecosystem, there was the keynote theater, there were all of the session theaters, there were all the sponsors, all of our content, all of our demo pods, and there were like 200 and something of our pods, demo pods alone, and same amount of sponsors. So it was huge, massive space. 14 football fields for context. That's wow. The size of this space. And so, you know, we were able to really redesign it based on these outcomes that the clients were, our customers were looking to solve for.
I could see why you're proud of that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was really amazing. And it was a data-led strategy. And that was the thing that I think I was the most proud of, because yes, seeing your strategy come to life is always rewarding, but knowing that it was grounded in data. Every recommendation we made was grounded in data.
And you are a data guru of sorts, aren't you?
I'm a data geek. I don't know if I'm a data guru. I mentioned about before I knew I was analytical. Like, I love pivot tables. I'm like, I once had a client tell me that my passion for pivot tables was embarrassing. And I was like, I don't care. You should learn how to use them. They're important. And I still say, I still believe that. Yeah, there's not much that can't be figured out with a pivot table. In fact, when my son was little, and he was very erratic sleeper, I tried to pivot table his feeding schedule to see if there was any sort of pattern in the data. Now, with ChatGPT, that would have been a whole different thing. It would be able to tell me now what the pattern was. But back then, I tried to figure it out with a pivot table. I didn't. So.
Are you using AI more in your business?
Yeah, I use it a fair amount. I think it's really important to lean into it and understand it. You know, a lot of organizations, if I talk about large organizations, many of them still haven't rolled it out across the company yet because they're trying to figure out what are the protocols around the use and, you know, the policies and so forth. But it's coming. make no mistake, it's coming. It's like when the internet first came out. I'm sure the same thing happened then too, right? Now, can you imagine our life without using the internet? Like, of course not. So I spend a lot of time not researching it, because I mean, I'm no expert, but I listen to an hour long podcast every week about it, which gives really great insights of all the new news. I actually participated in a 5-hour virtual event about AI last week, and it was fabulous, actually. And so, yeah, I use it a lot. I use ChatGPT a lot for ideas, especially when I'm doing content creation for LinkedIn. I'll use it for brainstorming. I don't like the output. I can read a post and tell you for the most part if it's been written by ChatGPT, but it helps with a blank page. I don't have to look at a blank page. Right. So I don't use it for data analysis because I'm working with customers' data and they're not going to want me feeding it into a tool where we don't know where it goes today and what, you know, how it will get used. So haven't used it for data analysis yet, but I think what we're going to see is there's AI, which is this generative AI, like ChatGPT, but AI is going to start to be implemented into almost every single tool we use on a day-to-day basis, if it isn't already.
Okay.
So I lean into it, and I really recommend that everybody does in this industry, because it's coming, and let's not get caught off guard.
How do you think it's going to impact the industry?
Well, it remains to be seen, right? It's all speculation. I don't really know at this point, but I saw this podcast that I listened to and whose event I went to last week. It's called the Marketing AI Institute. And they were saying that there's a new version of ChatGPT 5 that's coming out, or these large language models. I forget what the name of the model is. It's got a 3-letter code that stands for something. I just can't remember what it is right now. But basically, Sam Altman has said, when this comes out, 95% of tasks that marketing agencies, strategists, and marketers do will be replaced by AI. That's a stat out there, like right now. In fact, I'm going to pull it up while we're talking to make sure that I say it right. Like that's alarming.
It certainly is.
I'm like, I need to find a new livelihood, because I'm not, my company's going to cease to exist if I don't figure it out. Now, I mean, nobody really knows, right, whether that is the case or not. Yeah, here it is. Sam Altman says AI will handle 95% of marketing work done by agencies and creative professionals today.
Wow.
Easily and nearly instantly at almost no cost.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going to happen with it. And I think but I do believe that AI is going to change the way that we work fundamentally in the future.
Right. I agree.
Are you ready to celebrate your successes in the world of meetings and events? The Skift Meetings Awards are back for 2024, recognizing the most innovative business events companies across 15 categories, and we want you to be a part of it. Winners will feature on Skift Meetings, sending a clear signal to events professionals around the world that these are partners they can rely on. The final deadline for submissions is June 11th. We encourage you to start your submission today to secure the best entry rates. For more information and to start your submission, head to live.skift.com.
Getting back to events, what is one of the most unusual events you have attended and one of the most memorable?
Yeah, and I think I would say probably the TED conference, because, you know, TED is legendary. I mean, I at SAP was asked on a regular basis to make our event more TED-like, and I laugh and say, sure.
And you went to the TED conference
event. I went to the TED conference. So after I left SAP and I started my own business, I didn't have to justify the expense to anybody other than my bookkeeper or myself. And so I applied to go, and I was accepted and attended last April in Vancouver. And it was everything I expected and more. It was expensive, I'll tell you that. But it was worth every single penny. The people I met were incredible. Everyone was very, very welcoming. There were all these like people, like I went on a tour to Granville Island, like it was a foodie tour. And the guy sitting behind me was the COO of Steven Spielberg's studio. Like, and I'm like, one of us is not like the other. You know, all these people from all different industries, really, really senior people, but everybody was so kind and welcoming. But the way that they created the experience was what was so impactful to me. So I think probably, and I know Manit talked about it on the podcast last week, but you know, when you checked in, when I walked into the convention center, there was a lady standing at the bottom of the stairs with an iPad, and she said, "Hi, what's your name?" And I told her my name, and you'd have to upload your photo and some information about you before, like, you know, like ask me about was the question. And you had to put two or three things that people you could talk about. So they had my photo. So I figured they were just verifying that it was me before they let me up into the more secure area of the conference to go pick up my registration badge. And I'd go stand in line like you do at every other conference. No, by the time I got to the top of the stairs, there's maybe 15 stairs. By the time I got to the top of the stairs, someone was standing there with my bag, with my name badge, and said, "Nicola, welcome to TED."
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. Like, you know, just from an impactful first impression, right? Like, just really amazing. Other things that they did were, I remember there was always photographers all around, like there always is at events, but I was in this WhatsApp group of the community had sort of self-created. So I had friends before I even got there. So we met up at the welcome reception and hung out the rest of the week, which I thought was really impactful as well. But one in the group one morning, someone said, "Hey, did you guys get, was my picture on your recap email that you got this morning?" And everyone in the group was like, "No, mine was on my picture was on mine. My picture was on mine." They personalized every single email with your picture because they had your picture, right? Facial recognition, they could match it through the systems in their of any photos that they had taken and were able to personalize that email. The amount of buzz that created just from a surprise and delight moment from just within the chatter to be able to see that real firsthand and hear how impressed people were by it. I was like, it's brilliant. I mean, there's just so many different examples that I could give, but it was such a unique experience and such an honor for me to go. It was a bucket list item. And I mean, I wish I could go back again this year. I can't, but you know, I created a lot of great friendships that I still stay in touch with those people still to this day. And you know, lessons that'll last a lifetime, that's for sure.
And the industry is always abuzz with creating a sense of belonging. And it seems like they really did that before you even got on site.
Yeah, they did. They did. Well, and I think part of it was the mindset of the community itself, because these WhatsApp groups, I was invited to a TED for Women WhatsApp group, and there were like, I don't know, 2,000 people in there. That became overwhelming. So we created sort of a spin-off first timers, who's going to the first time reception group, first timers reception group. And I think there was about 40, 45 of us that were in that. And those were the people that I spent my entire week with. Of course I met other people as well, but you know, those were my foundation. So I went into this event, you know, I went to this event not knowing a single solitary person other than Monique, and Monique was working. She wasn't going to be spending any time with me, right? She was running an event. So I felt like I had this community, but that was the community itself. I don't think TED
organized
that. The community self-organized that. And I think that's just it was the mindset of people that were going.
Got it. If you were to plan an event for 1,000 Nicolas, what would that event look like?
I think it would be lots of fun. There would be lots of wine, not Chardonnay, because Nicola does not drink Chardonnay. I think What would that event look like? I think it would be about experimenting and learning different things. I love to learn new things. The day I stop learning is the day I probably need to stop working, because I don't know everything. I don't know all the answers. And I really like learning new things. So I think it would be a lot of experimentation. It was like that event where we first met at, when right. we went to the Google XI Institute. The conference or program, whatever we want to call it, like there, it was just really unique, right? The activations, the experiences they created were really unique and created that a sense of community in all of us as well.
And where we really started talking was the color curated cocktail reception.
Absolutely. Yeah. That cocktails, go figure.
What are the key qualities or skills that you have and that you have developed that have helped you become successful?
I think being data-driven, for sure. I honestly believe that has been the differentiator throughout my career, because I don't have to wait for somebody to tell me what the data means. I can do that. I can figure that out myself. Being data-driven, so being able to use data, and then understand data to inform decisions, I think has been one of the biggest differentiators for me. I think being kind, being curious, building relationships. I just think those are qualities that can help somebody be successful no matter where they are in their career. And just being curious and learning. Right. Trying to learn something new every day.
And I mean, just the fact that you paid to go to TED to see how it's done shows that, you know, how curious you truly are.
Well, yeah. And, you know, like I was joking around when I said I've been asked throughout my career to make my conference more like TED. Like, I swear probably everybody listening to this podcast has been asked the same. Make it more like TED. Well, first of all, make your content hell of a lot better than it is, right? The content process at TED is another thing too that I think everybody should read about and learn about. If you go to one of the TEDx websites, they tell you, as TEDx organizers, there's guides that they provide on how to curate the content. And it's not content management, it's content curation. And I think they're two distinctly different things. You know, I don't sing. I could not sing to save my life. Like, I cannot carry a tune. It is awful. But I sang at TED in one of the sessions, because there was such an amazing connection between the speaker and the audience. Not only did I sing at TED, I sang Beethoven's Ode to Joy in German, along with everybody in that TED theater standing on their feet, singing at the top of their lungs. It was something incredible to see. And it was because this man knew how to create that engagement with the audience to tell a story. He brought you along. And it was just, it was amazing. So I think that content, learning how to curate content versus manage content, is something that as an industry we could all learn from as well.
Wow, that's amazing. Are there any individuals or organizations that you've learned from or partnered with that has been key to your success in your career?
I think through when I was on the agency side, I always had an amazing partnerships with my clients. And I learned so much from them and from their trust in me. And so that is something that I try to bring forward when I was on the corporate side, working with agencies and so forth. You know, we hire people because of their expertise. We hire employees because of their expertise. The worst thing you can do is tell them exactly what you want them to do. So that trust that was put in me, I always try and pay forward. So that's obviously been had a big impact on me.
I mean, we talked about AI. Are there any other future trends that you're excited about?
I mean, it's a really exciting time to be alive, I think, right now, because like the change that's happening in this world is coming fast and there's a lot of it. From an events perspective, I am thrilled that the conversation is starting to change a bit around events for driving business impact, events for purpose, the business of events, as I call it, versus the events business. And those are two distinctly different things. The focus on data and driving outcomes and measuring what we're doing. And sometimes that's very difficult to do because, you know, I worked in a very sophisticated marketing environment. And even though I studied events, I consider myself a marketer before an events person. I understand that if someone is buying multi-millions of dollars of software, they're not doing it because of my event. Right. So taking credit or attribution, you know, from using the marketing term because of your event is a very difficult thing to do. And it's something that I actually don't think you should do because, you know, that's like saying you decided to marry your spouse within 30 days of one dinner and only that one dinner counts. Like that's ludicrous. Right. The same thing happens with marketing applies to marketing attribution. But I think understanding the impact of an event on the customer life cycle and understanding that event is one touch point in a journey of many touch points. It feels like that conversation is becoming more prevalent now. And that also makes me excited.
Why do you think that conversation is changing?
I think our industry might be growing up a little bit, you know, which is a good thing. You know, events are an expensive investment. Events are an incredibly powerful investment. And we saw that through the pandemic. And I don't know if you remember the first couple of years of the pandemic, people were like, events are never going to come back. We don't need events. Well, we had the halo legacy holdover period from events and from everything we were doing. But after 2 years of no events or very little events, people were desperate for events again. And the pendulums really swung the other way. But in order to justify that investment, and it is the second highest investment level in a marketing budget is events, outside of all of the digital channels put together is first, and then events is second. If you look at any the analyst firm data, both Gartner and IDC data are the same. 12% of the holistic marketing budget, not just the programs budget, the overall budget is going to events. That is a lot of money. So in order to be able to continue to receive that kind of funding, we have to be able to tell our own story.
Do you see events changing in any other way the next 5 years?
Yeah, I think sustainability is going to become, I mean, right now I feel it's like a checkbox. Yeah, you know, check, we've got sustainability. I think we have to be really hyper-focused on this. And I think the combination of sustainability and business outcomes are going to become closely intertwined because an event is going to have an impact, an environmental impact, right? But if the business impact outweighs the environmental impact and you can put the right measures in place to offset that impact that you've made, then events will survive. If we can't tell our impact story, if we can't tell the impact story, sustainability is going to push us out of business because events are non-sustainable. We know that. So we have to tell the combination of the impact story, but we also have to focus on doing better about sustainability and not making it just a checkbox. So I would really encourage everybody to look at the Net Zero Carbon Events Initiative. Super interesting insights about measurement in there. Still early days, but you know, with the intent of events being carbon or net zero by 2050. We got 26 years to figure that out. And that's like not to figure it out, to be net zero. And that's the intent of that organization.
And with that in mind, data takes on even more important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you could change one thing in the events industry, what would it be?
I think a lot of event professionals sort of have a bad, no, no, I don't want to say bad reputation, but we're considered, we have always led with, let me take a step back. Event professionals have a tendency to lead in the past to lead with the logistics as a conversation. So the event business versus the business of events. And we all get grouped into logistical party planners. I mean, my mother still thinks I'm a party planner. Come on. After all this time, or wedding planner. I don't even know. I often question her and say, even my kids, what do you think I do? And they don't know. But, we get put into this bucket of focusing on logistics and creating really great experiences. And I wish that our business is really hard. And I wish we got the respect that we deserve.
Is there anything that keeps you up at night?
Yeah, but not really, not about work. Kids are at university. That keeps me up at night, but no, nothing about our industry that keeps me up at night. I sleep well. I like my sleep a lot. I also have narcolepsy. I don't know if you knew that, but so when I go to sleep, I go to sleep because I'm not medicated anymore. So I'm out like a light.
Is stress a challenge for you? And if so, how do you deal with it?
In my own business, no, which is part of the reason why it was time for me to leave the environment that I was in before, because it was big and it was a large pressure cooker. For me now, not as much, because I chose my own path purposely to be able to figure out to work the way that I wanted to do on projects that I wanted to work with people that I want to work with. I don't take every opportunity that comes my direction because I don't want to work 24/7 anymore. I want to have a balance. I want to have a life. And I want to enjoy the people that I'm working with. Right. So I'm really fortunate that I've had the ability to do that in running my own business. Believe me, it's not all like roses and fairy tales because, when you're running your own business, your own sales and your own finance and your own IT and, business development and doing the work, there's a lot of hats to wear, but it's a much different pace than the one that I came from. So stress isn't as much of an issue. Of course, there are things that that create stress when you're everything and all on your own, but it's not anything that like I've had to dealt with before or that probably many people that are listening are dealing with. So I realize that and I realize how lucky I am. How do I deal with it though when I am stressed? Exercise is really important. And I garden. I became a gardener during COVID and it is my happy, happy place.
Wow. And isn't that what was on your TED name badge?
Yep. It was so it said I've got it around here somewhere. Ask me about growing tomatoes.
And did people ask you?
No.
Okay.
No, you know what? While it was a good idea and I get it in the spirit of things, name badges are awkward, especially because they hang right at boob level, for lack of a better word, and someone's going to be staring down. They don't stare down at your name badge. I wish there was just a different way that, we could make them not so awkward.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Is there anything you think is important for our listeners to know about you that I didn't ask?
No, I don't. I think I told you a lot, probably told you more than I intended on telling you, actually. That's because it's you. When you have a friend that's interviewing you, it's like a whole different conversation, right? No, I think the only thing I would say is I believe very strongly in mentoring and giving back. I mentor a lot of people on a regular basis and some on an ad hoc basis, but I would encourage everybody that has more experience in the industry to do the same, because I think the more we can share our knowledge, we can help everybody grow and we can help our industry become even stronger.
And as a female leader, do you feel females are breaking the glass ceiling in this industry?
In this industry, yes. I mean, because we're a predominantly female industry, right? Like this is one where we have a lot more females than men in. So if I look at the, you know, the most senior levels around me, in a lot of cases, they are females. And that makes me very proud. And, you know, marketing as well is quite female driven. I mean, I think we've always got work. We'll always have work to do. You know, I'm proud of my friend Monique for her promotion to a C-level executive. You know, everybody talked about the guy from Time, but you know, we got our own poster child in Monique as well. And I think we'll start to see more and more people take on those senior roles. But I think the key distinction that I want people to understand is we don't get to be senior C-level executives by focusing on the events business. Right? You know, logistics are important, but they're not what's going to get you a path to the C-suite at all. So we've got to really focus on the business of events and understanding that events drive business impact and outcomes. And that has to lead the discussion.
And that legitimizes the industry as well.
Exactly. So all of those things that we talked about, you know, they all stack up together to become really important. It's not like one's more important than the other. They're all important.
Well, this is great. We always end our podcasts by asking who should be our next guest on this podcast.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm thrilled because I was recommended for this as well by another guest. So, you know, South by Southwest is going on right now. So I would say, I think Joe Rivers, I don't know if you know Joe or follow Joe, he's from Czarnowski. But really he is, I don't know, I want this guy's job, first of all, because what he does is he goes to every big experiential event that you can think of. So he's at South by Southwest right now. He was at CES, he was at Art Basel, he was at Cannes Lions. Like he goes to all of these different events, and his job is to help his clients, or Czarnowski's clients. But basically he isn't an analyst on experiential strategies, if that's sort of the way that I describe what he does. So, you know, reading his LinkedIn posts all weekend, he was talking about all these different brand activations and how they were bringing them to life and what was working and what didn't work and where people missed the mark. And to me, like, I just think it's fascinating the work that he's doing and the insights that he's sharing with the industry, because we can learn from what he's seeing through his eyes. Like, I know I would not be building a brand activation without his insights in the future. So I just think people could find some really I think he would be really interesting and is probably as different a conversation than me. Like mine probably is going to be really boring compared to his, but I just think he could tell some really amazing stories about bringing brands to life.
What would be one question I make sure I ask him?
I would ask him this is probably a really difficult one for him to answer, but I would ask, what's his favorite activation that he's seen and why? And then what doesn't work? I want to know as much what doesn't work as what works, because, you know, sometimes that's maybe not quite as obvious.
Right. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for joining me today. And as always, it's a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.